Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar, joined this week by Brian Mueller.
I don't want to tell you a story. Okay, I'm going to tell you a story. Now, I want you to forget that story. Okay?
Cody Wolf.
You should have seen Brian pulling a Cameron Diaz out in the parking lot earlier.
Actually, he was.
He did.
It was a little too prostate checky.
And Jack Estabrook.
I don't want to lose you guys.
Our movie this week is 2013's The Counselor, a movie directed by Ridley Scott with an all-star cast.
Not sarcastic.
This really is an all-star cast. I mean, Michael Fassbender, one of the hottest actors, you know, working. Brad Pitt. Cameron Diaz, Javier Bardem,
Penelope Cruz
mm-hmm. is in it. I guess they're probably the main characters in a storyline that goes nowhere. But I feel like I'm leaving somebody out.
Perez was in it. Was that who it was?
Oh, yeah. Rosie Perez is in it. Yes.
Of the Boxing Hall of Fame fame.
Yes.
Remember she was there? Remember she was there last year?
The Boxing Hall of Fame.
She was randomly there last year. Yeah, I remember seeing the press release. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they always bring in like a random marshal for that.
Yeah.
Was it a special?
Yeah, and I was reading about it. I was thinking like, what connection does she have to boxing? She was in White Men Can't Jump. And then it was like, Rosie happens to be a big boxing fan.
Yeah.
Okay. She saw a boxing match once. And...
Not quite as random hooked. As the time they brought Grandpa Munster. Al Lewis, Grandpa Munster. And it was like, wait, what?
They just reach for anybody.
Yeah, they'll take anyone who's a celebrity. Okay, this movie, this is much like The Paperboy. As we said in our Paperboy episode, buckle up. Stick with us here. This movie is all over the map, and we're going to do our best to take you through it. It's not going to make sense.
No.
Just spoiler, not going to make sense. The movie doesn't make sense. And the movie, huge gaps of information seem to be intentionally missing from the movie. So,
what was Cormac McCarthy thinking? Like, he's actually a good writer.
Well, and maybe we can talk about this right up front. One of the things I found interesting about this movie is Cormac McCarthy and Ridley Scott clearly made a choice to say, we're going to throw traditional narrative script writing out the window. And we're going to do this in a very deconstructed way. You know, this is like, you know, if you look at I'm trying to think what's a movie we've done on the show that does like traditional screenwriting, like traditional three act, you know, arc structure. And they didn't
The
do
Canyons.
a film like The Canyons. Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay.
Classic three act structure.
So they decided to
swingers have sex parties, someone gets jealous, and then someone dies.
And text TV.
Yeah. Text TVs.
And Cormac McCarthy and Ridley Scott decided not to do that, and that's an interesting choice. And as I was...
Was it, though?
Well, as I was watching the movie, there were a lot of times where I thought...
It is.
There were interesting performances. There were scenes that I thought were mildly interesting, but none of it comes together. It's like making, like, a recipe where you like all of the ingredients, but, like, none of it actually adheres to each other.
Onions and ice cream just don't go well together.
Exactly, is what this started to feel like.
No, but I came up with it just
now. I like that.
Yeah.
Onions and ice cream. I like onions.
Instead of saying, like, water and oil.
Yeah.
Onions and ice cream.
I like ice cream, but together, hell no.
Yeah.
This movie, too, hates women.
Oh,
like every woman, they're either talking terribly about them or they're just completely useless and helpless.
Or they're trashy.
Yes.
It's just like, I don't know. It was just a weird script.
This is a strangely, it's four dudes sitting around talking about how misogynistic this movie is. But, I mean, that's how misogynistic it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a very non-traditional script. Keep that in mind as you get totally confused. Even if you've seen this movie, you're going to hear this and be like, wait, what?
That's what the quote on the back of the DVD case is. Non-traditional, says Alex Dunbar.
Buckle up.
Interestingly told story.
Yeah. Defies Hollywood convention.
Deconstruction.
Yeah. All right, so we start off with Michael Fassbender and Penelope Cruz hooking up. They're a couple, apparently.
Yes.
And I don't even know why I'm describing this scene, because like many scenes in the movie, it goes nowhere.
But they hang on it for like 12 minutes.
A very long opening scene.
A long time. You just see a lot of things going on. I would say the first 25 minutes of this movie make no sense at all. It's just a collection of images and scenes. It's very like, I don't know if anyone, have you guys seen Tree of Life, the Terrence Malick movie?
No.
It's just like unconnected images of like dinosaurs, the Big Bang, and Brad Pitt as an abusive father in the 1960s. And these things are just intercut with seemingly, you can just kind of draw your own connection. That's sort of what the first 25 minutes of The Counselor is like. You're just seeing images being like, well, okay, I bet these things are related. I have no idea how. You know, we see guys putting metal drums of something into a truck. We see Javier Bardem and Cameron Diaz watching a leopard chase a rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's like leopards in there for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, and there's so much, like, I've never seen a movie where characters are just spouting corny philosophy more.
Oh, yeah,
one.
It was painful.
You know, like, there's just, like, this is a movie where totally straight
I don't think truth has temperature.
That was one of my favorite ones. Yeah, Cameron Diaz just out of, just casually in conversation says something like that.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, that's a cold truth or something. She goes, I don't think truth has temperature.
Yeah, and you're just like,
yeah, yeah. Is that supposed to be clever? Or?
And Cormac McCarthy's a talented writer, but... I mean, everybody.
Well, I think part of the problem is Cameron Diaz is freaking terrible in this movie.
She's atrocious.
I think she's doing an accent sometimes.
Okay, yeah, well, we got to talk about
that. She's better suited for lighter roles. What the hell is she doing in this dark movie?
She started this movie with an accent,
yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
I'm
yes,
not crazy,
did you guys
right?
see the, in IMDb, it has a
it,
thing
she
on
did.
That where she started with one accent and then she had to redub all of her lines.
Well, because at the end of the movie, she says, you know what I love about Americans? They're so useful, implying that she's not American.
Well, at one point, he says she's from Barbados.
Oh, that's right. Are all the women
she's
from Barbados
be, no,
like
she,
you?
Yeah, she's supposed to be from Barbados.
So why doesn't she
what?
Sound...
What? Yeah.
Yeah,
so she's doing like a...
He's right.
An accent, but it's like, it's almost not even...
To say this accent comes and goes is a... that's not even fair.
I didn't even notice she was doing an accent.
Yeah, she was in the beginning.
Sometimes she was.
In the beginning, she did an accent.
But I forgot about it, and at the end of the movie, she says, I love Americans, they're so useful, and I was like, Americans, what? Yeah.
Although her character is Argentinian in the script, Cameron Diaz recorded her lines with a Barbados accent. The studio executives forced Diaz to re-record all her lines.
With just an American accent,
I don't
think?
Because at some point she's doing an accent, though. It's just weird. I mean, not to harp on it too much.
I have a note on my page. At one point early on, she's doing... Like, when you're a kid and you have, like... You do terrible accents. Like, you don't have...
Or
like,
when you're an adult, too.
Or when you're an adult,
or when you're an adult, too.
Oh, go ahead.
Sometimes we do bad accents.
I was like, Hugh Jack and Michael Caine. Yeah. But, like, it felt like somebody doing a... bad Spanish accent mixed with a Bond villain accent was what it felt.
Especially when you have her acting against Javier Bardem, who's got a very, you know, thick, natural accent.
Well, that's
she's like faking an accent.
Well, that's what kills her in this movie, too, is Javier Bardem, even in this crazy movie, is giving a good performance, and she looks horrible in comparison. Because I would say the majority of her scenes are with Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
And that doesn't help her any...
It's just not fair.
I would even... I'm going to go as far. Another superlative. Maybe the worst performance we've seen in the show. In any movie in the show.
It's
I think
there.
I would put
there.
It right up there. That's how bad I thought it was. So we also now get... I mean, it's just a collection of random scenes. We get an endless scene of Michael Fassbender in Amsterdam looking at diamonds.
Yeah, so I thought...
That's right.
So now I'm thinking... Well, this must be the plot. He's going to be engaged in some illegal diamond smuggling, and that must be what's going on here, right? Because later on, they're talking about the deal. Are you ready to get involved with what we're into?
It would have been awesome if the diamond dealer was Nicolas Cage.
And I was...
Yes.
Yes.
Beautiful.
You think this is for an engagement ring? This isn't an engagement ring. You think you're in Amsterdam?
Would you put this on a soundstage on the Paramount lot? You think Ridley Scott directed this?
Shop,
it's over ball.
There's a vast unfinished area in the back of the diamond shop.
But that, you would think that these diamonds play, because we get this really long scene. I mean, like, it's got to be like 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Of Michael Fassbender.
And he's like a diamond expert too, which never comes back anywhere.
That never comes back. The diamonds never comes back. He knows all the terms
and yeah.
Yeah. And in hindsight, I have no idea why that scene.
He's basically just buying a ring for his girlfriend because he's going to propose to her.
It could have been a 15-second scene of him going in with no dialogue, because that's the other thing is, like, this movie is so talky.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is like, talk, like, you know. You didn't even need talking. Like, you could have just had, like, done music or Nat sound of him, like, buying a diamond. It didn't...
Have the character maybe, I don't know, in a jewelry store in a city.
Yeah.
And why do you have to go to Amsterdam?
What I was thinking, and this was clear in that scene, is it was almost like Cormac McCarthy was writing a book and didn't quite understand you don't have to put quite as much detail in a screenplay. Yeah. Like, there was that scene, even before he got into the diamond shop, of him, like, walking down the street, and then he, like, pauses for, like, 15 seconds to look down at a piece of paper, then he looks up at the diamond shop, then he looks down at the paper again. It's like, oh, my God, just walk in. Like, what is this doing? It's like, if you're writing a book, you would be like, so-and-so walks to the diamond shop, made sure he was in the... Yeah, that's fine when you're reading a book, but you don't need that in a freaking movie, my God.
And what's so
especially
funny,
when it's 2 hours long, it's like, you could have trimmed a lot of that
stuff.
Yeah,
and they'll spend... We'll spend 8 minutes in a diamond shop watching Michael Fassbender buy a diamond that isn't relevant later in the movie, but huge, huge, crucial plot elements are not discussed at all.
Yeah.
Right. If you look at the main synopsis of The Counselor, it's a lawyer gets involved in drug trafficking. There's not one scene about drug trafficking.
No.
There's more scenes about him making sure his directions are right to the diamond shop than there are actually drug trafficking.
Yes. So weird. So weird.
The synopsis should have been a lawyer shops for his wife's engagement ring and on the side talks about trafficking drugs.
In the B plot, there's just some drug trafficking stuff going on.
Yeah. Oh, and some guy gets decapitated.
He walks into an episode of Breaking Bad. And, so then he goes and talks to Javier Bardem, right?
I think, yes.
He does.
He goes to his
They seem to talk more about women problems than they do about drugs, don't they?
Well, it's like a 10-minute scene talking about... Yeah, like, they're talking about Diaz and women and how women are...
Women.
You can do anything to a woman except bore her and all this stuff. And it's like... And he's like, oh, by the way, let me tell you about this weapon that can strangle a guy to death. I'm just telling you this. It probably won't come back at all ever, but just keep this in mind.
I thought that this meant that later on some bad stuff was going to happen. Javier Bardem was going to become the villain. And Michael Fassbender was going
to be... I wasn't
sure
that he wasn't a villain at this point.
Was going to be choked by this device, and then last minute he was going to break free. That's what I was assuming.
No.
Don't assume. When you're looking at a movie like this, assume nothing. You have to be...
Well, the way the movie was going, the way the movie is going, I could see that just never coming back.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
I had no expectations of that ever coming back.
I'm like, that'll probably come back, but if it didn't, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it may not.
Because
yeah.
when it comes back, it comes back to a character who wasn't in this conversation. Right. So it's like, they just had this conversation to tell us at this
And I had forgotten about it at first, so I was like, what's going on? And, oh, it's the thing. Okay. Yeah.
So
the thing on his neck.
So they're talking, and that's the end of the scene. He says, "Oh, there's this thing," and you put it on a guy's neck, and then it slowly tightens and then cuts his artery. And
it's
then
like
he
a little motorized, like
strangulation device, garrote or whatever.
Yeah. And he's like, "Okay, end of scene."
Yeah. Like, okay. Then there's like some more cheesy philosophy, like, you know, terrible philosophy speak, and then like end of scene. You're like, okay. So Michael Fassbender takes Penelope Cruz to a dinner at a restaurant where for unexplained reasons, Cameron Diaz's leopard is sitting at a piano. The way that the shot is framed...
Were we supposed to assume that's the same that. Leopard?
What else could it be?
I forgot about that.
I mean, I don't know how many leopard... Where are they again? In Mexico?
I think we're in Texas.
That's the other thing. I kept getting confused as to where they were.
When there's a yellow filter, it's Mexico. When it's when it's a regular, you know, just like a blue filter,
I'm partially colorblind, so that doesn't help me. I'll just stay confused.
The movie does not make that clear. Yeah.
I guess there can't be too many leopards in Texas.
I thought the way they shot it that the leopard was playing the piano. I really, for a moment, I really thought
it's a very talented leopard. Yeah.
That's why they kept it around.
I don't always play the piano, but when I do, I have leopards do it for me.
And Michael Fassbender and Penelope Cruz get engaged.
And as soon as he asked her to marry him, I'm like, okay, she's dead. she's gonna die. That's the only reason they're setting this whole thing up. Because
I was guessing that. I was like, it was, but it's still like at it this point where we're going nowhere. And then there's a scene where I wasn't even completely clear who knew who. And Cameron Diaz and Penelope.
Who knows who?
Penelope.
Cameron Diaz knows Penelope Cruz.
They have a scene sitting by a pool where we basically realize, like,
They know each other.
I was like, oh, okay.
These two characters connect. This is the only scene they share together.
Yeah.
That is the only scene.
And we also get Cameron Diaz's leopard spot tattoo. Is this leopard?
Yeah, she really
can
likes
she
leopards.
Change her spots? Ha. Ha. Ha.
Except she had like paw prints on her back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cue for edit. Oh, no.
And she seems to be like almost, I thought she was going to be like jealous of Penelope Cruz. Is this a hint maybe of motivation into anything that Cameron Diaz's character does?
I feel like Jack was watching a different movie than we were.
No, well, we do.
I didn't need that at all.
No, because in this scene, because again, by this point of the film, at this point in the film, it hasn't. I'm bored, but it hasn't been what the hell is going on yet. So now I'm thinking, okay, these two characters know each other. And judging by the scene, she takes the ring off her finger and looks at it. And she's like, ooh, that's 3.5-carat diamonds. Oh, have you ever... She starts kind of creepily coming on to her. When you go into the confessional, do you religious types talk about your sex life? And she's like, they establish Penelope Cruz as this innocent, nice girl. She's got the nice, good-looking, successful fiancé. She's got the beautiful ring. And we've got Cameron Diaz, who's obviously, for some strange reason, sick of Javier Bardem and this lavish lifestyle she's living, and she's bored or whatever.
Well, they do, establish that Cameron...
Maybe
that
she's jealous of her.
This scene does establish one thing, which is that Penelope Cruz is very sweet and kind of nice, and that Cameron Diaz is very unstable and a little dangerous. Like, dangerously unstable.
Dangerous and mysterious.
Yeah, and by the way...
Denarius.
Yeah, Cameron Diaz is still terrible in the scene, but the dialogue she's giving out establishes that.
What I didn't... So, apparently, I guess we're supposed to assume after seeing this scene that Javier Bardem and Michael Fassbender have a history together.
Yeah, like they're...
Of which
like they,
we don't know, because one's a
lawyer.
My
assumption is,
because
he calls him counselor, I thought it was his lawyer.
I think,
everyone calls him counselor,
I think
though.
Michael Fassbender has been Javier Bardem's lawyer in cases, was what I took. And, well, okay.
Well, they're obviously friends.
Before, when he's going to see him, it's kind of unclear whether they've really ever met before.
That is unclear. And I had to go on Wikipedia. I highly recommend you watch this movie
this
with
actually,
Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I did as well. About halfway through,
really,
I had to pause it and look it up.
You almost need to. They are also partners in that nightclub that you see them in later on.
Yeah, I got that
movie.
Later on, but...
Yeah, because they're like but
I thought that was the deal they were talking about the whole time. Like, they were going to buy this nightclub together and there's some shady stuff going on with it, but...
Yeah, this
but apparently
is...
they already owned it together. Like,
I'll be honest with you. If the synopsis didn't say as the first words a lawyer gets involved in drug trafficking, I would not know that he was involved in drug trafficking.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
You really wouldn't know.
You never know that.
Yeah, because they're talking about some deal, and do you have...
Yeah, it could be a nightclub.
The money. That's what I thought it was.
Well, then Brad Pitt... Let's talk about when Brad Pitt's character comes into this movie. Michael Fassbender...
Random. I didn't even expect him. I was like, what is that? What?
I wasn't expecting you, Brad Pitt, but come in.
All right. Fair enough. I'll let you in. Welcome aboard.
I have nothing to offer you but tea, but okay.
Michael
Speaking of bad accents, we're going to have to redub that in post-production.
I think I will.
I have nothing to offer you
I'm going
tea.
To do the rest of this podcast with accent.
Yeah. So Brad Pitt and Michael Fassbender meet at a bar and have Heineken's.
Oh, great relationships.
But they're like alone in this bar, so it's clear that they shot it on like a Sunday when no one was in there.
And
again, I didn't know if these guys knew each other.
That is
like, I got
also
the feeling this is the
clear.
First time they met.
I don't think they know each other.
But they acted like they did, but then later on they acted like they didn't.
This,
if that makes sense.
Yes. I don't know.
And
I
this
don't
is,
even know what's going
and
on
what's
here.
Worse is these are two really good actors, and they're just kind of, in this boring scene.
Oh my God,
it's
so boring.
Very like where Brad Pitt basically is like, are you in on this deal? Michael Fassbender's like, yes, I'm in. Brad Pitt's like, I'm kind of warning you not to because it's really dangerous.
So basically in this scene, Brad Pitt is counseling the counselor
Well, they keep saying that. He keeps like, you're advising me. He's like, I'm not advising you. But you are advising me. I'm not advising you.
Yeah,
like,
and it...
Just get on with the scene.
Just very
and what are his motivations? Never in the movie does Michael Fassbender have, even as Brian said, he doesn't even do any drug trafficking.
Let me ask you this story. Because the movie never explains this. What role do you guys think Michael Fassbender is playing
in this?
That's
what I was going to ask. All right, so here's what we know. We've seen in the scenes before that this drug trafficking, this specific plan they're talking about has already been set in motion. They've already put the cocaine in the truck. Septic tanks.
Yeah.
Yep. The truck is off and running.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Michael Fassbender, in this meeting with Brad Pitt, he's asking him where the truck is going, which Brad Pitt says Chicago.
So he knows about the truck.
Right. He says that he's going to get a $4,000 return in the investment, like $20 million. So the truck's already going to the location.
Brad Pitt already knows where they're going.
So Michael Fassbender is coming into this deal midway through, and he's getting a $4,000 return on his investment. Like, what? Yeah, what is he doing to earn this money?
Well, and here's the only thing I can think of, because he tells Javier Bardem earlier that Michael Fassbender tells Javier Bardem earlier that he's having money troubles. By the way, money troubles, maybe you don't fly directly to Amsterdam to buy your diamond. But anyway,
I'm not a financial advisor,
but so he's having
and
money
troubles.
And eat
at restaurants where leopards play pianos.
Right. It's got to be expensive.
And it's not like he's a pauper. The guy's a lawyer, and he obviously defends some wealthy people.
And so he's doing this for money. But I'm guessing he's putting up money to make
I think he was
money,
just investing.
Investing
yeah.
in it?
That's
but
what it
I don't.
Like.
Nothing that we see seems to really need investment.
Well, and here's the other thing, too.
That's what I mean. The trucks, everything's already in motion. It's not like they were waiting for his money. The truck's already going to the place. Like, what?
Yeah. I mean, and it's all done by the Mexican drug cartel. Like, right. The Mexican drug cartel is sending drugs. Like, they don't need... The Mexican drug cartel isn't like, oh, God, we're so light on money right now. You know what I mean? Like,
times are hard.
Oh, we can't pay our gas bill. Like, I don't...
Well, what I thought was going to happen, too, was because Javier Bardem asked, you know, he's like, I'm in. And Javier Bardem's like, oh, do you have the money? And he says, no, but I'll get it by Thursday or whatever. So I thought the movie was going to be about him getting this money and then getting in trouble with that somehow. Like, he had to get this money.
Like, he steals it
then
from
he
the
didn't
cartel.
Have the money or something. And that's what... But no, it's like this whole... I don't understand what actually
happened. If you're a lawyer, like, your value would be, okay, you can, like, pull some strings and, like, oh, get this, like, guard to let them through without a check or some legal ramifications, but... They don't ever say anything.
Yeah.
Like, this plan seems to be going. It's not like Brad Pitt's like, oh, this truck isn't going to make Chicago, counselor, unless you talk to this guy. Like, the plan is already going.
Right.
It's like all Michael Fassbender has to do is say, I'm in, and he gets $20 million. Like, I would get into drug trafficking if it was that easy.
Yeah. I don't.
It sincerely makes no sense.
And I feel like they don't show it because it wouldn't make sense if they showed it. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just add like a line of dialogue like, oh, you're not going to be able to get through this checkpoint unless you call in a favor with this guy. Like, just something.
He needs to be important to the operation, and he's not.
Right.
He's just kind of there. He
He just woke up one day, walked into the whole movie. That's
who knows what the hell Brad Pitt's role in all this is.
I don't know what his role is
either. I thought he was like more like an again, this is now I have to be thinking to really put this perspective in, but I was thinking maybe he was more of a distributor.
He didn't distribute anything.
I don't know. We don't
Wouldn't
see
he be
him.
A distributor? Because he takes the drugs and sells it in the state. Maybe he's a buyer. Like, he buys and distributes
it in the
state.
You know what this felt to me? This felt to me like what a friend of mine once called Hollywood logic, where people like Brad Pitt and like Michael Fassbender are in on this deal, yet not doing anything. They're essentially executive producing this deal. Where you're like, wait, what role do you actually have here? Yeah. Like... Are you?
They don't get their hands.
The executive producer probably doesn't get a 4,000% return on their investment.
Yeah. So it's really dumb. And Brad Pitt basically almost tries to talk Michael Fassbender out, but Michael Fassbender's like, no, I'm in.
And I like how he's like taking notes on this little notepad. Brad Pitt's giving all these details, and Fassbender's like writing it down.
Yeah.
Like, that's smart.
Brad Pitt even says it once. He's like, don't write that down.
Yeah.
It's 2013. Like, he brings a notepad.
Where's the truck going? Chicago. Don't write that down. Yeah. Why did you tell him?
Boy, that would be really incriminating if they find Chicago written on a notepad.
$20 million.
We got you, Fassbender.
Yeah.
You're going down.
You thought the truck was going to Chicago? You're wrong! Chicago's my favorite musical! I watched it on DVD 157 times, okay?
It's actually going to Philadelphia, you idiot!
So then...
Now Rosie Perez comes into the movie. As if we're not confused enough.
I was when all of a sudden, when all of a sudden it cut to a prison and they got like a prisoner walking down, you know, to the, wherever that she was going, I was like, what is it? Like, where is this another character they're bringing in? Like, I don't...
They bring in... So, completely separate from everything we've seen going on. Mm-hmm. Separate from everything.
Yep.
Except it's not, but it is. Michael Fassbender is also a court-appointed attorney for Rosie Perez, who's in jail for something. I don't even know what.
If he's such like a high-powered defense attorney, why is he getting like court-appointed? That's what I was thinking too. I was like, he's supposed to be he's a rich defense attorney, and he's
public representing
Rosie Perez. I agree.
Maybe he's got a soft spot for her. I don't know.
It doesn't seem like it's a soft spot for her.
So I don't know. So yeah. Rosie Perez. So
they have this bizarre banter, and then she says, "My son got a $400 speeding ticket. Could you pay that ticket for me, please?"
Yes, because
but it takes them 15 minutes to get to this, and this is the point of the scene.
Oh, like everyone, I'm telling you, this is like the talk. This is a podcast where we're talking, and like we're talking less than people in the movie. This is just talky.
What did they clock him at? Yeah. 210. 210? 210. 210's not a speed.
It's a person's weight.
It's a person's weight.
Instead of like, okay, I'll get him out.
Instead of being logical and saying 210 must mean 210 miles per hour.
Here again is just
Do you mean kilometers
question.
Per hour?
Because the movie hinges on this point. Why does Michael Fassbender agree to pay her son's $400 speeding ticket?
I think...
Because he calls him cheap or something. He's also told us he's having money problems, by the way.
Yeah.
And this is the moment where he screws everything up. This is it.
I don't understand.
This is why everything bad happens to him.
I think it's because he feels sorry for her, because not only did he get the ticket, but I guess the police stole her son's money that he had on them.
Maybe he's trying to make up for the fact.
What did you say? He had like $12,000 on him or something? It was like
$2,000 something.
I thought it was like I thought it was like a huge amount.
I don't think it was that much.
So he sucks as a lawyer, got Rosie Perez thrown in the clink, and he feels guilty.
Rosie Perez got sent to the Gray Bar Hotel.
That's right. And he feels guilty. Oh, I like the fact they give them like pink prison uniforms, by the way. That was a nice touch. Yeah.
Rosie Perez got sent up the river. She's in the Big Bird cage.
And she's... And he feels guilty. I didn't even know why I said that. I honestly
like
don't.
Jack's writing some pulp novel right now. Counselor paid a visit to Rosie Perez at the Slammer.
I gotta get Sharon Stone to approve on this book.
He had to fork over some serious bread to get her get a Nino out of
the. You're in the Slammer. This is what we're gonna do. See. Anyway, I'm saying, well, did he feel guilty because she's in prison? If he's her attorney, he can't be that good if she's in jail.
Or she might be guilty.
Yeah, that's true. But if he's supposed to be a shady lawyer, right?
I don't know what he's supposed to be. We don't even know what she might be in jail for, like, not returning a library book. We don't even know. Yeah.
So, I guess he just bails the guy out, because the next scene is this guy riding his motorcycle up. At 210 miles an hour again down.
I guess he got out
on the highway.
Yeah,
and then he goes and feeds his dog in some warehouse, and it was like this kind of scene that didn't need to be.
In the category of unnecessary scenes. So soon after that, this guy who we don't know at this point who he's working for, but you can basically see this guy is following this motorcycle guy because he knows he has a connection to the drugs.
Right.
So he eventually sets up a trap to kill the motorcycle guy and puts this line of razor wire on the highway.
Can we say this takes
in effort
15...
to decapitate him? But before they do that, they have to show him going to a motorcycle store and measuring the motorcycle to see how far up he has to put the wire. As if we would see that scene where he's setting the trap and be like, hey, how does he know how high to set that wire? Yeah. This doesn't make any sense.
You couldn't just go on the internet and Google, how tall is a motorcycle?
And so he's
or, I don't know, maybe just guess it.
He's setting this wire across the highway as a trap.
And no cars drive by the entire time.
It goes from day to night. It is our understanding.
He's really confident no one's going to come down that road.
No car went down that road for what had to have been a period, because he's setting it at midday. Yeah. It is night by the time he uses it. So no car, had any car going either direction traveled on that road during like an 8-hour stretch, yeah, the trap would have been destroyed.
I thought it would have been funny if they showed the like motorcycle guy getting killed, but then like they pan like 20 feet more to the left and there's just like five motorcycle people with their heads chopped off. Yeah.
I also envisioned while they're setting up this super elaborate trap and like for a motorcycle, I was hoping like Wile E. Coyote was going to come in and be like, finally, I knew one of these could work.
Yeah, where was Wile E. Coyote should have been taking notes on this.
Yeah, Acme Price, the wire.
Acme wire.
That's why I always skip the measure of the motorcycle step. That's why.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah. He messed it up.
So we should say too, there's so many just random scenes that go nowhere. We get a scene with Cameron Diaz,
oh yes, the confessional,
who scene. Just goes, oh, to a confessional.
And does she know this priest?
I don't think so.
Who knows? No. The scene goes.
I thought she did at first.
So
in the format of this movie, first I thought she didn't. Then I was clear. Oh, she does. Then I thought, no, she doesn't. I don't know. Every scene is its own emotional journey and confusion, where she berates this priest with all this like kind of sex talk. Then randomly, Cameron Diaz drops a line that her parents were thrown out of a helicopter when she was 3 years old, and then proceeds to continue barraging the priest with sex talk to the point where the priest walks out of the confessional and he's like, "I'm out.
This is too much."
Yeah,
I made a vow, and
you must hate women because of all the sex things they tell you in the confessional booth. That's why you're a priest. I'm like, huh? Like, she's obsessed with the idea. Like, almost to the point where she gets turned on by the concept of talking about sex to a priest. This is the second time she's brought it up in this movie. And this time, she's actually talking to a priest.
And then, I think probably, if the paperboy is best defined by the way, a paperboy, another movie that claims to be a mystery thriller, is best defined by a scene where Nicole Kidman gives Zac Efron a golden shower on the beach.
Yep.
Out of nowhere.
I don't know. I was going to say the Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
There's that bondage scene. Too, but, you
know. What's the plastic for scene?
This one, this Yardley. Movie is probably forever going to be remembered as a scene where Javier Bardem, for no apparent reason, basically unprompted, describes to Michael Fassbender Cameron Diaz having sex with his car.
And there it is.
And I don't know what words to like to say. The scene is
gynecological is the word you should use.
Yeah. Even at the end of it, Fassbender says, "Why are you telling me this?
Why did you tell me this story?
I don't know. Forget it.
I don't know." This is what's so crazy. There are so many scenes in this movie that end with a character asking another character, "Why are you telling me this?"
The beach had sex with my cup.
Javier Bardem seems like legitimately troubled in this movie, and for the wrong reasons. Like. You would think he would be troubled because he's like a drug trafficker and it's a really dangerous game.
Yeah.
Yet, like, this scene really starts with him. They're in the club that they're developing and Javier Bardem, like, looks down. And the story starts with Michael Fassbender being like, "What's wrong?" He's like, "Oh, you know nothing." Like, "No, really, what's wrong?" "Oh, women, you know. They do things to me." "Like what?" "Oh,
she had sex with my car."
"No, really, I want to know." "Okay, well, my girlfriend had sex with my car." Okay.
That's the one thing is he basically browbeats him into telling the story. Then at the end of the story, he's like, "Why did you tell me that?" It's like, "Well, you just like wouldn't let me not tell you 2 minutes ago."
And I'm going to pay Javier Bardem a compliment in this crazy movie, in a script that is ridiculous, where nothing makes sense, nothing ever adds up. He does build an interesting character sort of out of it, in that it's this guy who's a drug dealer and who is self-aware that he sort of loves Cameron Diaz, but that she's very unstable and very dangerous and toxic for him. And like, it's amazing that he builds that character out of what he's given to work with, because he's given nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he pretty much communicates that information to the audience with his eyes. That's about all he has to work with here.
And half the time they're behind sunglasses, so it's even more impressive.
Yeah. Ah, yikes. Okay.
It was quite the scene, though.
So we're, if you're paying very close attention to the movie, it seems that Cameron Diaz is the one who's working with the guy who set up the elaborate Wile E. Coyote mechanism to decapitate a motorcycle driver.
Just because he was hiding something in his helmet.
Because he had a piece to the truck like that's carrying the drugs in his helmet, like a they kill couldn't switch.
Just, they couldn't just run him off the road, beat the crap out of him, take his helmet, and then take the thing out of it.
Well, it was pretty clean what they did.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I would also say they seem to know that that this thing was the kill switch.
Yeah.
They watch the truck driven to this lot. A guy takes the kill switch. They're following the guy who is the kill switch. They wait for him to give the kill switch to a guy who's on a 206-mile-per-hour motorcycle. Why don't you just take the... Why don't you just go... Like, here's my other problem with the movie. Everybody seems to know everything. Everyone knows Cameron
Diaz.
Except
the audience.
Except the audience. Cameron Diaz seems to know everything that the cartel is doing. The cartel seems to know everything that Cameron Diaz's people are doing. Like,
but Cameron Diaz's people are screwing over the cartels, who are more concerned about Fassbender than they are about Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
And we don't even know what Michael Fassbender did.
And I still don't know. I still don't know what happened. So then Brad Pitt, who also is in the club of people who know everything that's going on, tells Michael Fassbender, hey, this guy got decapitated and our truck of drugs is stolen. To which, you know, Michael Fassbender, and this is where this just gets really confusing.
He's just talking about a snuff film.
Yeah, I don't know what that was all.
Well, there's a lot more like terrible philosophy. And this, I'm going to ask a genuine question. So, okay. In the what we're led to believe is Michael Fassbender, for unknown reasons, pays the motorcycle kid's speeding ticket and gets him out of jail.
Yeah.
Unconnected to that, Cameron Diaz then just happens to hire that same kid to be the one to...
No, Cameron Diaz doesn't hire the motorcycle guy. She hired the guy to kill the motorcycle guy.
He was involved. He was involved with.
He was with the cartel.
Yeah, he was. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. He was involved with. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. So Cameron Diaz just knew that the cartel had hired Motorcycle Kid, but Michael Fassbender didn't know that the cartel had hired Motorcycle Kid.
He had no idea.
Michael Fassbender obviously has no idea what's going on. He's writing down Chicago when.
My head is hurting so much right now.
He just figured out where the truck was going, let alone who's working for who. Right.
If you could see this, my head is like in my hands. Like I'm, like I feel like a shell of a human being.
Well, here's my understanding what the logic. So basically, Brad Pitt says the cartel is coming after them.
Right. Right.
So I, from what I understand, the cartel's logic in this was that they think Michael Fassbender knew that the motorcycle guy, known as the Green Hornet, had the switch to get the cocaine from the truck.
Yep.
And he was in jail, so the only way to get that switch...
But he didn't have the switch until after he was out of jail.
That's right.
Is that true?
Yeah, because he gets him out of jail, and then he goes and
gets the switch. That is very true. In fact, they don't even show him letting the kid out. They just show the guy again.
If this kid's working for the cartel and Michael Fassbender's working for the cartel, then why would they think that Michael Fassbender wants his kid dead?
This is what I think.
Wouldn't they be going after Javier Bardem instead?
I love how we're debating. We're debating the most basic points of this movie. This is what I think happened. The cartel thinks...
Wait, we need Wikipedia.
I know. Well, trust me, it's no help. I tried this.
Wikipedia's like, I don't know.
Wikipedia's like, make it up on your own. I think the cartel thinks Michael Fassbender got the Green Hornet, the motorcycle rider, out of jail, and then Michael Fassbender had him killed because Michael Fassbender was trying to steal the drugs. Michael Fassbender and Brad Pitt were doing
point,
a double cross. What are they going to do
with
the drugs?
The sticking point, though, is that he had a connection to the Green Hornet, and that's why they were coming after him now, because he let him out, so he had a connection to him. Right. But doesn't that just help the cartel if he's out of jail, because he's the one who's got the freaking...
I would agree.
But why, if the Green Hornet at the time didn't have the kill switch,
right?
why would he get them out of jail so he could get the kill switch and then kill him? Why wouldn't they just kill the guy who had the kill switch then?
Yeah. Because they'd obviously get someone else to be the mule for the kill switch.
This
whole thing.
They could even just put him in a green jacket if the Green Hornet isn't really known by name in the cartel. And they're expecting a guy in a green jacket.
So you're saying there's multiple Green Hornets?
There might be. Kato could put on the Green Hornet outfit. Yeah. You don't know.
I think this we're going to run with
this. This is, by the way, this is the moment that the whole movie hinges on.
Yes.
And it is never...
That's why it doesn't make any
sense. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And we're trying to have a basic understanding of the point the whole film is hinging on.
And that's why, that's why I didn't understand why they're freaking out.
Right.
Because Michael Fassbender is freaking out. And Brad Pitt's like, well, I'm taking off. I'm going to live in a monastery or whatever he says he's going to do.
Right.
And, this whole thing's breaking apart. And I'm like, why? what does that have to do with anybody? I don't understand what...
So, what did Brad Pitt basically, do?
Basically, he's just like, the deal's blown. I'm going to go off and hide because they're going to come after everybody. Now the cartel's going to come after you. They're going to come after me. And
here's the question also that no one is... neither Michael Fassbender or Brad Pitt in this lengthy, super philosophical conversation they have, no one goes, hey... Who stole the drugs? Who had a lot of information about this stole the drugs? None of them seem to care about it. You'd think that they would work together to try to get that guy.
If only the cartel knew how clueless Michael Fassbender was.
Yeah.
Well, I think Javier Bardem even alludes to that later when he's asking him what he should do. And Javier Bardem's like, they don't know how stupid you are.
Yes.
And he's like... Yeah, that might be your only plan.
Yeah.
They don't know how little you really know.
That you know nothing. Yeah.
They know that you could never pull off something like this.
Yeah.
So,
So Wile E. Coyote, the guy who set the wiretrap. I'm just going to call him Wile E. Coyote.
That's fine.
Wile E. Coyote and another guy who are now working for Cameron Diaz have the truck.
Yeah, and they're driving it somewhere.
They're driving it
somewhere. To Chicago.
I still bring it to Chicago.
I assume.
The fakiest...
Unless that's been changed since then that we don't know about. Michael Fassbender wouldn't know. And
he got out his notebook.
By horrible coincidence, the truck's actually going to Boise, Idaho. Yeah.
He's out to Brad Pitt. Now, is the truck still going to Chicago? Who cares about the truck?
So Wile E. Coyote's driving with another guy working for Cameron Diaz, and the fakiest fake cops that we've seen since Trespass show up in this movie. And they turn on the light, they pull over the drug truck, and immediately Wile E. Coyote is like, they're not cops. Their shirts aren't even tucked in. They don't even look like cops. They're cartel guys. The cartel guys get into a gunfight with the guys with Wile E. Coyote and the guys in the truck. Blah blah blah. A bunch of people get shot. Someone's got a little Uzi.
A random bystander sees this on the road.
Some random bystander. He gets
Fargoed.
Yeah, he gets. Oh yeah, that's true. He gets Fargoed.
He does get Fargoed.
What was the point of that scene?
I don't know.
I don't. Now here's my other question: how does the cartel know where the truck is? How did they find the truck? Because that's also a key...
Maybe the kill switch had a GPS in it, too.
That's
a pretty key
moment in this movie, which is also not explained
at
all. So the cartel, by the way, now has their drugs back.
Yeah.
That doesn't... But none of the characters in the movie seem to know that.
I guess it doesn't really matter, because I guess as they... kind of alluded to before, the cartel is ruthless and they're gonna kill no matter what, whether they have their product back or not. So
I guess
at that point that's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
But
yeah, okay. So
as is most things.
So the cartel is now driving the truck again, and they had the truck, they lost the truck momentarily, they now have the truck again. Brad Pitt's like, all right, everything's screwed. He calls up Penelope Cruz and he's like, you got to get out of here. It's not safe. You know. And this is one of my favorite little moments in a goofy movie. And I don't know if anybody else noticed this.
Yes.
So he's telling her we get out of here. And she's like, all right, we can meet in Boise. And she goes on a travel website. This reminded me of a website that a mutual acquaintance of all of ours, if a mutual acquaintance of all of ours was naming websites, this is what it would be. It would be called totallytraveltriptours.com.
Totally.
This website created by a 13-year-old girl.
I know.
Totally trip travel tourist.com.
Yeah, I was like, what happened on the production design?
Yeah, I was looking at that too. Like, I'm like, why is that website so long and alliterative?
You look because you hear it, just you just automatically look for it. Like whenever they use a search engine in a movie and it's Bing, you're kind of like, Bing. You know, so I was like, I wonder if it's Expedia or Travelocity or Priceline.com. Nope, totally travel tours.
Did anyone check? Maybe it's a real website.
Yeah, we should check.
We should check. I feel like that was like an instruction that went to the art department like the day. Like that in the day, someone was like, we need this website. And like the art department had to do it on like 5 minutes notice.
What's it called again?
Totally travel trip tours.
A trip tour, really? It's a trip and a tour.
I'm not a big fan of product placement. I don't think anyone really is. But if you have a choice between totally travel trip tours and like Expedia, you know, fork over the money for Expedia or get Expedia to pay you.
Or even just do it like just invent like a not ridiculous name where it's like just travel, like travelrates.com.
Travel.com.
Like, yeah, something silly Trips. Like that. Trips.com. Yeah.
So. They agree
it sounds
to be...
like something that would be in the Miley Cyrus movie.
Totes.
Totes Trav Trips that
/ tours.
Yes.
Totally travel trip tours is not a real website. There is one called Totally Trips.
Wow.
Yeah, that must have been one.
That's a website about people falling over.
So they agree to meet
with
in Boise.
Benny Hill music playing 24/7.
And so they show Penelope Cruz. She is like at the airport or whatever. At the same time, Michael Fassbender is at a hotel waiting for her.
Yeah.
Now, is he in Boise?
No.
I don't know.
He
must be because he's like waiting for her.
I guess.
They never show him traveling to Boise from
Texas.
No,
he's not in Boise.
It was a yellow
filter, which made it a little confusing.
I was watching
the scene,
and I was
clearly like all like Hispanic
unclear.
People in that scene.
It could be a Latino community in Boise.
Yeah, it was very confusing.
No, because that boy, later on when that boy delivers that thing to him at the end,
he has a Mexico,
Hispanic.
But I think that's a different hotel.
That hotel
was like very I Frank. Wait, Scott. I mean, that one, because at least he's in a nice
hotel. They're in the next room cleaning the wounds of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So he went from Boise then back to like Mexico?
I assumed he went
to Amsterdam to buy a diamond. Money is no object.
I assumed he was in Boise because he's like waiting in the hotel lobby. It looked like he was waiting for her.
I think that scene is in Boise, but they do not give you much to...
Either way, I never knew where anyone was in this movie.
I knew was the truck was going to Chicago.
Yeah.
The audience
either
is
way, I knew that one scene was in Chicago.
The audience is the opposite of the cartel. The cartel knows where everyone is. The audience knows where nothing.
Either way, he was... or she gets abducted at the airport.
Yep.
Abduction.
And she's never seen again.
Nope.
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, briefly.
Yeah.
So he's waiting in the hotel for her. She doesn't show up, and I guess he just goes back to Texas.
By the way, intercut with this, we do get one of two legitimately great scenes in the movie where the guy who is driving the cartel truck comes up to this kind of one-stop shop for the cartel where in a quick sequence of shots, he gets his wound bandaged and cartel guys – literally, like, instantly repair his truck, replace a door, and then he just drives out again.
Yeah.
It was a pay and spray from Grand Theft Auto.
I was more interested in what was going on in that pay and spray than anything else in the movie.
The first of two scenes where you're more interested in, like, the two-minute side story than the actual movie.
I'm not a metal worker, but I figure after you weld a hole shut on a truck, can you just spray paint it while the metal's still hot? I mean, does that even work?
I'm sure they waited till it cooled.
I'm sure they know what they're doing, Jack. Yeah.
I'm assuming that was flammable fluid in the back of that truck as well.
I think it was sewage.
Yeah, it was poop.
Yeah.
With some cocaine mixed
in. I thought it was diesel.
No, it was sewage.
Yeah. A lot of deuces in there, if you know what I mean.
So somewhere along the line here, Javier Bardem gets murdered.
Yeah, I know. He's like driving with the leopards in the back of the car. Because where the hell is he going with those damn leopards?
And then
he gets shot in the ass, and they're like, we need him alive, and then the guy shoots him in the head moments after being told we need him alive. And then the guy's like, what are you doing? We need him alive! Oh, well. And they start looting his shoes.
Well,
they see the leopards.
Those are some kids, yeah.
Yep.
They see the leopards, and they run away.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was just like, okay.
That was very unceremonious.
So was that the cartel or were those like a gang of bandits, like thieves?
The cartel killed him.
The cartel killed him and then
oh, and the thieves came to loot his body.
Well, those were just kids.
Yeah.
So no one knows that he's dead. Fassbender's calling Brad Pitt and saying, hey, have you heard from Javier Bardem? I don't know where he is. And he's not answering his phone. He's like, no, I don't know. I'm out of here.
Yeah, Brad Pitt's he pulls the ultimate gotta go.
Yeah.
You know,
well, he's like, because Brad Pitt asked him, like, oh, where are you? And he's like, I'm at home. He's like, well, you're kind of an idiot. I'm not at home. I'm leaving.
And Michael Fassbender's like, tell me something I don't know at this point.
Javier Bardem told me that was the card I should play, that I'm an idiot. Yeah. I'm just going with it. Yeah. The last place they'd expect me to be is at home.
This, by the way, reminded me of Cold Light of Day, where there's that great line from Henry Cavill, where he's like, they think I'm an idiot. Let's play that to the hilt.
At one point in this movie, too, Javier Bardem does say the line, Cold Light of Day.
He does. Yes.
So I was like, that would have been a much better title for this movie than it was for that movie. It would have made more sense.
Yeah, I know, because this doesn't really seem like the kind of movie that would justify having the character's name as the title.
Yep.
You know, sometimes movies are a character's name and it works. This is not one of those opportunities.
So, they do now at this point, as close as this movie comes to spelling out anything that's not Diamond related, they explain to us that Cameron Diaz is the one who hijacked the hijack of the hijack or like whatever's going on. Cameron Diaz was the one who attempted to
She was in league with Wiley.
Yes.
She is Wiley.
Yes. Yeah, she was working with Mr. Coyote on that project. Yeah.
A leopard and a coyote joining forces.
So, and I think around here too is my favorite scene in the movie just because of the two cameos in it.
Oh, this is probably the best. Yeah, this is the best scene.
And it felt
in the movie.
Like it was a deleted scene or a scene from another movie because it didn't have anything to do with anything. But so it goes to, because this whole movie I've been thinking about Breaking Bad because all the drug stuff and it's kind of this, you know, similar feel, except not good.
Except one that makes you want to throw up.
Yeah. Except not good. Yeah.
And so it goes.
It's a crucial disclaimer.
That's another quote on the DVD.
It was like Breaking Bad. Stop the quote there.
Was like Breaking Bad with in italics, like
Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Except,
so it goes to the scene.
Except the kind that makes you go to a septic tank.
It goes to the scene where like these guys are cleaning out the drugs and taking the drugs out of these bins or these barrels.
Yeah, because the truck gets to Chicago, basically.
And then it cuts to Dean Norris, who plays Hank in a DEA agent in Breaking Bad.
Yep.
And he's like this drug guy in this one. I'm like, oh my God, it's Hank. It's Dean Norris. Awesome. And then,
and who is he talking to?
It cuts angles.
Reverse shot?
It's John Leguizamo he's talking to. I'm like, oh my God, John Leguizamo too. It was like the two, like, I wish the whole movie had just been these guys.
I know.
And there's a really genuinely funny bit because Dean Norris, who's buying the drugs, is like, oh, okay, the drugs are in those three metal barrels.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, what's that fourth metal barrel for? And John Leguizamo's like, oh boy, it's a little bit of an inside joke in the drug industry, you know what I mean? Yeah. Check it out, it's a rotting body. Ha ha, hilarious. And it felt like
this scene was written by somebody else because it was actually good.
Right,
I
could have spent an hour and a half with those characters.
Yeah. Right. I was hoping it was like a deleted scene from Breaking Bad, like he would reveal he's actually a DEA agent, he's undercover, and he arrests everybody. He's like,
anything
it's like, and then these two disappear from the movie. It's like, why was this scene in here?
And why is it Dean Norris and John Leguizamo?
These two
kind of
big actors,
small.
And it's like this throwaway scene. Is you got the two? I guess the rest of the cast is so A-list. It's like these guys don't matter. But
yeah,
sometimes you need a good B-lister to play a movie.
Yeah,
like well.
So at this point, the movie kind of grinds to a slow halt because we know that the cartel has their drugs
now.
And well, yeah, I mean it's been grinding. Javier Bardem is dead.
Yeah.
Penelope Cruz is kidnapped. Michael Fassbender realizes he's in big time trouble.
Yeah.
So he calls through a connection of his. One of his clients gets him in touch with a big shot in the cartel. Because Michael Fassbender's whole plan is to call the cartel.
Is that what this was?
That's what
I had no idea who this guy
again,
was.
Thank you, Wikipedia, because I didn't.
I was confused about this as well. I thought he was talking to Penelope Cruz's dad or something.
How does Wikipedia know all this?
I don't know. They talked to Ridley Scott and Cormac McCarthy. Cormac McCarthy wrote the Wikipedia entry.
They talked to the cartel?
And his plan is to talk to the cartel and be like, dude, I am so dumb. You know?
Bro.
Yeah. And Ruben Blades, who plays this cartel guy, is basically like...
Well, he first has to go through one guy to get to Ruben
Blades. That's his client. Yeah. That's his, yeah, his client who hooks him up with Ruben Blades.
Once again, would have been a lot quicker to cut the scene out of having a scene where he visits a guy who then arranges a phone call with another guy.
Well, yeah. And this whole scene, this whole speech that this guy gives, I didn't hear one word. I was so tuned out at this point.
Ruben Blades or the other guy?
The guy who, when he starts crying, when he gives a speech, yeah, he's like, you're this or that, yeah. And then he starts crying, and he's like I don't know, I didn't hear anything they're saying, because
I had no idea that philosophy was so crucial to the drug industry, because it seems like everyone who works in drugs really loves spouting terrible philosophy. Exposition. Because Ruben Blades goes on this, like an endless monologue, and finally Ruben Blades is like, the world where you... seek to understand. Wait, how do? Oh, the world where you seek to undo the mistakes is different from the one where mistakes were made. And I'm like, okay, yeah. So basically, Ruben Blades.
But doesn't one lead to the other? Aren't they? Aren't those two quote unquote worlds intertwined? Does not one seek to rectify mistakes made?
We can't be heralded.
How can they be two separate states of being?
Ergo, Penelope Cruz's head is cut off. and basically, Ruben Blades is like, dude, suck it up. Yeah. You're screwed, and everything went down, and it's not good. Can't help you.
Yeah.
But thanks for calling. Yeah. I'm going to take a nap now.
Yeah, I got to go.
Got to go make another terrible Predator movie.
Then Brad Pitt gets his head...
Yeah, we know that Cameron Diaz, that girl from, I think she's in like Game of Thrones or something.
She's familiar.
Like that girl, she basically.
She like hits on Brad Pitt in the airport, and then they show. In London.
Oh, that's where they were?
Yeah. And then they, well, occasionally they threw little locators at the bottom of the screen.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
I thought it was Boise.
Yeah.
So
everyone's going to Boise.
Cameron Diaz hires a girl to get Brad Pitt's passwords from him. And then they
how
kill.
She did that, I don't know, because I don't know about you, but I don't
even
randomly
if you
tell.
Sleep with a guy,
I don't.
How would you?
I don't. You know, I've never told my passwords to girlfriends. It's just not something that comes up on like a first date or a one night stand or something. I can't imagine.
That's the first thing.
So what are your passwords?
Can I get you
my
drink?
Passwords? Leprechaun 76.
Can I get you a drink? Here's my social number.
Yeah.
That's my pickup line. What my passwords are.
You want to see my passport?
Brad Pitt gets beheaded.
The password to my heart.
Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah. And that password is abduction.
That password is password.
It's QWERTY.
I changed all my passwords to diamonds after we watched Trespass.
So, that would have been great if the password was password.
Password was password. It would be good. So he gets decapitated. Cameron Diaz has his passwords for his international banking accounts. And then back in Mexico, Michael Fassbender gets a DVD dropped off. The title of it is Hola!
Hola! And exclamation point!
We're led to believe it's a snuff film where Penelope
maybe that was a relation.
According to Wikipedia, that's what we're led to believe.
I figured it was because he was crying and Brad Pitt just talked to him about a snuff film and he saw Penelope Cruz's body being thrown
I figured it was a video of her being killed or whatever, but I didn't make the snuff film connection.
Yeah. And
would have been really fun if it was like that video from Crank where the guy's like, you're asleep, I'm injecting you with this stuff.
Yeah,
and
that
would
have been awesome.
Oh, yeah. The movie would have had an extra hour of awesome to follow.
Oh, God.
Well,
because Crank was awesome.
Crank was pretty good.
So,
and then we get...
Then there's the weird end scene with Cameron Diaz.
Diaz and that guy from ER who's her banker. And they're trying to put a button on it where that Cameron Diaz is relocating to Hong Kong.
And she's orchestrated all of this just to get money, I guess. So she's responsible for everyone's deaths so she could get a little money from the cartel. And somehow she's outwitted the cartel.
Well, not really.
No, she didn't outwit the cartel, but then she did manage to get
Brad
Pitt's
money. That's why she went after
Brad
Pitt, because she lost the jug. She was like, damn, I need money, so I'm just going to go after this guy.
I was wondering what that was.
Oh, I thought that she played it all, and the cartel didn't get... Wait.
The cartel got the
drugs. So who got the drugs?
The cartel.
So what was the... Why did they want Michael Fassbender dead then?
Yeah, don't
ask. He's not dead.
On principle.
I mean, why would they kill his wife,
Just because they're the cartel.
On principle, because they thought he was behind it.
Yeah.
Just to teach him a lesson.
They got what they wanted in Cameron Diaz.
The answer was in Rubin Blades' monologue. Go watch that again. And
I was
going
to say, as a character in this movie,
didn't take enough notes.
This is what a character in the movie would say to you, Jack. The questions your mind develops as it tries to unfurl through the mysteries of this life.
The secret is inside, Jack.
Yeah, the secret is inside. The secret's inside.
Here we go.
Yeah.
The secret's inside.
Cameron Diaz in this final scene, who is awful in this movie, is especially terrible in this final scene.
I'm famished.
Well, she has a line where she's like, the slaughter that is about to come is beyond our imagination. I think they had her ADR it like one word at a time, and some poor editor
that is about
to
come.
Oh, that does not surprise me to hear that they changed her character in ADR.
Yeah, it's all ADR.
How does she work? Like, that's a real question. Like, we've seen her in Night and Day. We've seen her other things. Like, how?
That's right. She wasn't.
I think she's good in like romantic comedies. She's not a horrible actress when she's given the right kind of role.
Yeah, I didn't think she was terrible in Night and Day, but this one she was just because it was.
I never thought
role.
She was a bad actress. I think
she was supposed to be intimidating and dangerous, and it was like. Nah,
she's a bad choice for a role like this.
Yeah. Okay, we do have a fun loved it for this one that I really wanted to do.
Oh, in case you guys were wondering, no, there was no credit stinger to try to explain anything. I was desperately hoping that maybe there'd be something there,
but I was wondering.
Oh, you stayed through the credits?
Yeah, I always does.
I do.
My God. God, that's like a snuff film. Jeez.
This whole movie was just a snuff film on the audience.
So I'm going to read two loved it reviews from IMDb.
Oh, yeah.
The first
one. Jack, stop watching that snuff film.
Oh, yeah.
The first one is Fasani 70 from the United States. This is a 10 out of 10 review. Titled,
from Boise?
Maybe. Titled Nietzsche, Darwin, Bergman, McCarthy.
Okay.
And... I should preface this by saying I love this review because the writing of this review is like a character in this movie wrote a review of the movie they were in. The plot, setting, and more generally, the world McCarthy creates are vehicles for the theme, that of the human condition, man's striving, reaching, cunning, and ultimately, his animal nature. The
leopard nature.
Quote unquote. Overly long dialogue was especially trying for short attention spans.
It was trying of great.
But those who may have enjoyed the great cinematic classics over the past century, by the way, if you've been watching movies for 100 years, congratulations that you're still watching movies. Those who've been watching the great cinematic classics over the past century will adore this creation. Through thematic contrivance is created a jungle filled with various inhabitants. Through a form of Darwinian selection, the weak are slowly exiled from this unforgiving world until only those with an appetite for blood and an intolerance for weakness are allowed to remain. There is enough blood and perversion to keep you smiling. Hello. Wait a second. Whoa.
This guy be on the FBI watch list?
I know. Well,
it's like Charles Manson writing a review from prison.
Wait till you hear a review we have for next week, by the way. Okay.
This guy sounds like a real douche.
But the weight of its humanity will grip your soul. Thank you, Fasani 70. And the second one I really wanted to read, this is from Stewball from Arizona.
Hey, Stewball!
Hi, Stewball. Thank you for joining us.
It gave it an 8 out of 10 review.
Okay.
8 out of 10.
More realistic.
This is an excerpt. By the time it's over, you realize this is more blood-curdling and wicked than any horror tale.
Well, he's right about that.
But it sneaks up on you. It's like savages, blow, and traffic. All rolled into one that reaches out and punches you in the throat with the scope and depth of the cold-blooded darkness it portrays. And hold on, Stewball edited his review. Here's his edit. Edit. I'm bumping it up from a 9 to a 10 out of 10. A masterpiece. There's a couple possibilities, but I doubt anything's gonna surpass it this year.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure everything surpassed it that year.
Surpassed it this year, Stew Ball.
It may have surpassed Food Fight.
Yes.
But that's not an easy thing. That's not a hard thing to do.
Stew Ball took a little cocaine and then edited that review.
I do want to, because we've, as people know, sometimes we record these or we've watched some of the movies in advance. We have a Loved It for next week's episode that is the darkest and most disturbing Loved It review we've ever had.
Wow.
We'll do a quick summary. If it's, I think we're all just going to say the same thing. Is it so bad it's good? No. It's an interesting misfire. There's interesting things in it. Javier Bardem he's doing an interesting character in a terrible film. They're trying to do something outside of traditional Hollywood storytelling, but none of it comes together, and it's incredibly annoying and made my brain hurt.
They're trying to do like a Coen Brothers thing almost, where like everyone dies and it's like one character's like left in ruins at the end and he's lost everything. And except the Coen Brothers make that movie well.
Yes.
And this movie wasn't made well.
Another thing with the DVD, like a Coen Brothers movie. Stop.
Like it was made by the Coen Brothers.
in italics.
Yeah. That's a good point, though.
It just didn't have any, it wasn't as entertaining as a Coen Brothers movie, you know, because it wasn't like, it was trying to be dark and gritty, but. You know, the Coen Brothers are dark
and
gritty.
It was just plain old.
It's kind of fun and dark and gritty, though.
Well, and you can watch what they do, like what the Coen Brothers would do with a movie like Miller's Crossing or something, and do non-traditional, you know, storytelling. But they're so good that it's a masterpiece. This is like a souffle that flopped.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, I don't know if you saw Burn After Reading, but like where Brad Pitt's in that one, and spoiler alert, he gets shot in the face out of nowhere. And it's kind of like a shocking thing. Like, whoa, like you didn't expect his character to get shot in the face like that. But
yeah.
And they're kind of trying that kind of thing. Like these characters are getting killed and it's like shocking, but it wasn't. You know, it's just kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boring.
Yeah.
Brian. So no, I didn't like it.
Yeah. I can't say anymore.
Yeah.
I got a sense that this film was just full of people who wanted to work with Ridley Scott.
I never will again.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, Ridley Scott's doing a movie. I'm in. You know,
because I was seeing that during the Leguizamo and Dean Norris scene. I'm like, why do these guys like do this one little scene? I'm like, oh, it's probably because we're working with Ridley Scott and Brad Pitt.
Oh, it's a Cormac McCarthy script and Ridley Scott and Brad Pitt. Well, I feel like that's the only way a studio would have greenlit this, because a studio would have been like, wait a second, this, you know, normally like studio notes would have been like, nothing holds together. There's no, you know, you need connective material in this. But they're like, well, Brad Pitt's attached, Javier Bardem's attached, Michael Fassbender's attached. You know, we're not going to say no to, you know, those guys. The budget on this was like, I think like 25 million. It was a relatively low budgeted movie. I mean, this is basically
what you got. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So probably fun for them to do, not fun for us to watch. Terrible.
We watch it so you don't have to.
That's right. It's Andy Wolf's subversive other motto for us. All right. I think that brings this. I did not do a so bad it's so wrong it's right question for this movie because it was so awful I didn't want to think about it anymore.
It's traumatic.
I think that's
Brian's just waving us off.
Brian's like, we got to get me out of here.
Wrap it up.
Yeah. I think that does. That brings this one to a close. If you can, as we've been making the plea lately, please, if you can leave a review for us on iTunes, we appreciate that. Those really help us out. We've had some really nice reviews come in, and would love to just take a second, give us a star review, whatever you can do.
Or a five-star review.
That would be great. That would be great. Oh. Yeah. Oh, if
maybe
only.
Old Stu can give us a...
Old Stu Ball.
If he could... if that guy who wrote that like philosophical review could write a review up for iTunes,
I would like
that'd
to hear
incredible.
It.
Yeah. All right. I think that brings it to a close. We will be back here next time. Bye.